Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. You know, there are times when President Trump's Twitter feed doesn't match White House policy, or when policy utterances from the White House disappear, never to be seen again. Think maybe the president's suggestion a month ago that he'd like to impose new taxes on the internet? That one kind of disappeared from public view pretty quickly. But one place where the president has been very clear and very consistent is his desire to eliminate government regulations.
We have begun a historic program to reduce the regulations that are crushing our economy, crushing. And not only our economy, crushing our jobs because companies can't hire. We're going to put the regulation industry out of work and out of business.
That was the president speaking at the Conservative Political Action Conference in February. During his first year in office, the president has directed government agencies to assemble deregulation task forces, and their job is to identify and roll back regulations that are deemed harmful to business. Our partners at the New York Times recently teamed up with ProPublica to find out who the members of these agency deregulation task forces are and who they've been meeting with. Now, most of the agencies that they contacted did not want to identify who was working on these deregulation task forces. But once reporters were able to get some names, they found a number of political appointees with potential conflicts of interest. Danielle Ivory is here. She's with the New York Times. She co-authored the report, and she joins me to discuss her findings. Danielle, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I read in your report along with ProPublica that you managed to dig up 71 names, including 28 with potential conflicts of interest. Who are some of these people?
Well, you're right. So we were able to dig up about 71 names and found that about 28 had these potential conflicts. And some of them were coming from the lobbying world and had been registered to lobby agencies that they're now at and are tasked with looking for regulations that could be eliminated or streamlined or rolled back. We also have people from industries that have been trying to roll back regulations, who work for employers who were trying to roll back regulations, or had clients that were trying to change regulations at the agencies that they're now at. And then we also had people who were coming from other government jobs who might have sort of an ideological bent that is more in line with the Trump administration, more in line with a classic Republican administration that wants a smaller government. We didn't really look at those people as having potential conflicts. That's not what we're talking about. But we did identify them just so that the public would know who is coming into these positions and is going to be eyeing the regulations that affect them on a daily basis.
Now, you also said in a couple of cases you found people who stand to directly profit in businesses that they're moving to deregulate now.
Right, right. And it's potential. I mean, you know, we found some names that raised a little bit of a red flag. So, for example, we found a man named Byron Brown. He's on the EPA's deregulation task force, and his wife works for a company called Hess Corporation, which is an oil and gas corporation, and they are very directly affected by the EPA and their rules. And we wanted to know whether Mr. Brown and his wife owned any Hess stock. We were not able to get an answer on that. Also, Mr. Brown's wife's company, Hess, is part of a trade association that has actually already started lobbying the deregulation team directly. So that seemed to be an instance where there was the potential for personal profit.
So that's one deregulation advisor at the EPA and his spouse. What are some other examples throughout the government?
Well, there was one example in particular that really jumped out at us. So you mentioned before agencies were not particularly forthcoming about their deregulation task forces. We asked for names. We thought that would actually be a pretty easy thing to get and ended up being stonewalled at several agencies. We also asked for correspondence and calendars because we wanted to know who these people are talking with and who they're meeting with. And we FOIA'd all of the major agencies for this and got very, very little back, if anything at all. But we were able to get our hands on hundreds of pages of visitor logs, like handwritten visitor logs that you would see in like the lobby of an office building at the Department of Interior's headquarters. So Robert Federici, my ProPublica counterpart and reporting partner on this, we split those up and went through and looked at every single meeting that a Department of Interior task force member had with someone outside of the department. And we backgrounded all of those people, anyone who's name we could read because some of the handwriting was very messy. And we ended up finding a woman named Laura Peterson, who happens to be a top lobbyist for a pesticide company called Syngenta. She met with a man named Scott Cameron, who's a newly minted official at the Department of Interior. And he happened to come from a nonprofit that he founded that got money from Syngenta. That was one of the first meetings that he took at the Department of Interior.
So that's Scott Cameron, one example, who you found you had to go into visitor logs in messy handwriting to get all this.
Yes.
And Danielle, I mean, you mentioned 71 cases with around 30 people who may have conflicts, and that suggests strongly that there are many more examples out there since you had such a hard time getting this information. You've put a call out to readers to help with this, to sort of crowdsource finding members of these deregulation task forces. What do you want them to do?
Well, we would love for people who work in government or interact with these task forces in some way to get in touch with us and tell us what's going on, what they're looking at, what their priorities are, who they're meeting with. And you can reach us at taskforce@nytimes.com or taskforce@propublica.org. And Robert and my signal numbers are on both websites as well if you want to get us through encrypted chat.
Have you gotten any bites so far?
A lot, yes.
A lot of bites coming in. So this crowdsourcing is starting to work.
Yeah, more brains are better than one.
Danielle Ivory at the New York Times and her partners at ProPublica are putting out the call to federal agencies, to people who work with federal agencies. What are you hearing? Who are they meeting with? If those agencies aren't being forthcoming with the people's information, well, you go right to the source. Danielle Ivory, reporter with the New York Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Deregulation of big businesses like banks or fossil fuel companies, and who's doing that regulation, can sometimes miss a different story going on in cities and towns all across the country. Many small business owners are excited by the prospect of President Trump delivering on his promise to deregulate industry and make it easier for them to do business. Brian Keller is with me now. He's president and CEO of Keller Logistics Group. They're a trucking company in Defiance, Ohio. Brian, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
Brian, how many employees at the Keller Logistics Group?
We have 370 employees.
Does that qualify as a small business? That sounds like a pretty big small business.
Good question. I think in the government size, we'd be considered small.
So what are the big regulations that affect you? You're a trucking concern, right?
Yes, we are. Trucking and warehousing. So, you know, with us, it's getting a workforce into our industry. And, you know, you can't drive a truck on federal highways until you're 21 years old, which is a large gap from when you graduate from high school to get to the age to drive a semi.
Oh, so one regulation that you would like to see changed is to lower that age to 18, maybe?
Yeah, possibly. When those regulations were put into place, probably back in the 80s when we supposedly deregulated, you know, trucks were different back then, roads were different back then. Today, we have cameras in our trucks. We have automatic transmissions. We have safety assistance with collision avoidance, lane departure, and stuff like that. It's easier to drive a truck, and we have the cameras, which we can tell if you're a good driver or not a good driver.
You know, Brian, trucking rules have been a huge debate kind of below the radar in Washington for a lot of years, and there are lots of new rules now about the number of hours a trucker can drive continuously, the number of miles, you got to get off the road and rest for a certain amount of time. Can you explain how these rules affect your business and how you might like to see them changed?
I support most of those rules. You know, our drivers are allowed to drive 11 hours, work until 14 hours a day. I don't think the rules need changed a whole lot. What we need is consistency throughout the states of having the same rules. There's different rules in California than there are in Ohio, and just makes it hard to comply when you're an interstate trucking company.
So, Brian, what's your biggest hope from President Trump's promise to deregulate industries, including the trucking industry? Where can you save the most money? You mentioned the age of drivers. What else?
other than that, I think what he's done, slowing down the Department of Labor and some of the rules that they were putting through, they had the change in overtime exemption, you know, for exempt employees. They over doubled that amount to almost $47,000. That's a lot of money out in the Midwest. You know, a more gradual approach to increasing that makes a whole lot of sense, which he's already stopped that. They had the fair paycheck rule, which, you know, we think we're paying everyone appropriately, but, you know, we're going to have to, you know, hire a consultant to come in and go through all of our pay practices and structure to make sure everything was done right in case the federal government decided to target us. You know, 16 or 17-year-old kids, you can drive a car, but you can't drive a forklift. Now, wouldn't it be better if we were employing our kids, you know, on a part-time basis, training them with some sort of apprenticeship to be welders, forklift drivers, which then could eventually become truck drivers, you know, or other industries. But instead, you have to play video games and work in fast food restaurants and can't get out there and learn a trade like construction or welding or plumbing because federal laws won't allow us and some state laws to employ our kids and train them a skill.
A view on deregulation from Defiance, Ohio, and the small business of Brian Keller, president and CEO of Keller Logistics Group. Brian, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Todd.